Good morning. My name is Dave, and I'm one of the pastors. And if you're visiting with us today, if you're a guest, super grateful that you are with us. Thanks for giving church a shot this morning. About 8 days ago, on a Saturday morning, there was a group of about five or six of us that did a painting job at a playground that's just right around the corner. And we're sitting here painting, just chatting. And one of the persons who was there is a teacher at our local middle school, Corning Pace Painting Post Middle School. So I took the opportunity to say, hey, how are my kids doing? Because I got two middle school kids. And she's like, oh, they're doing great. You know, it made me feel good as a parent to hear that. And there was another parent who asked how her child was doing. And she's like, oh, he's doing great. And we're painting. And she goes, I got to tell you about this one kid who is a really, really good kid. And I know who this kid is. We'll call him Gus. That's not his real name. And she would say, you know, he's really kind. He reaches out to kids who are on the fringe. He's always accepting of people. He sits on the front of the classroom, and he's always answering questions, and he's very respectful to all of the teachers and the adults in the room. And she just kind of went on and on of how great this kid was. And I had a moment of cognitive dissonance. Yeah, I had to look up what the word meant, too. It means the mental discomfort that results from holding two conflicting beliefs. So on one hand, you know, as a pastor, as a Christian parent, I believe in the words of Jesus when he said that if you follow me, you'll have an abundant life. I take that to mean that when you follow Jesus, life is better. Not always easier, but it is better, not only this life, but also eternal life. So I have that belief. But then, as she's describing how great this kid was, I'm thinking to myself, okay, out of 1,000 kids, there's 1,000 kids in the middle school, Corning Pentecost Middle School. This is the kid that she started to go on and on about. And I know this kid. I know this kid's family. They are a great family in our community. And I know the dad very well. And I know that they do not take him to church. And they probably, I don't know this for sure, but they probably don't teach the Bible to this kid at home. And so I had this like cognitive dissonance going on. And I started to think like, okay, what's the whole point of telling kids about Jesus when out of 1,000 kids, this is like the best kid? Why do you need Jesus in the first place if you can be a good kid without Jesus? And it leads us to the question that I've been planning on for a couple of months talking about today, which is why would any parent force religion on their kids, especially when there are so many different religions and belief systems, and of course the belief system that just be a good person, be a kind person, and you'll be okay in the end. Why not just allow your kids to choose their own path? Why not allow them to explore, look around, listen to different teachings and different religions, and make their own choice? Because, I mean, let's be honest, especially if you're a Christian, it's hard to disciple your kids, right? It's hard to make sure you get them to church and youth group consistently and teach the Bible at home and be a good example at home. I mean, it's a lot easier, again, if you're a Christian, it's a lot easier to do immersion baptism and sprinkle discipleship. Right, like we're going to celebrate baptism in a moment, which is like you go under the water, you get immersed, and everybody celebrates it. But sprinkled discipleship is kind of like, well, I'll bring them to church once a month. I'll bring them to church when there's nothing going on. Everybody's healthy. Everyone got 8 hours of sleep last night. We'll talk about Jesus when it comes up. But it's just kind of hit or miss. Because if you're honest, you're thinking to yourself, my kid's pretty good. Like they're kind, doing well in school. So discipleship, Jesus, it's kind of optional, right? Because again, teaching the Bible to our kids, it's hard. Right, it's challenging. Like, and I think I don't know. Like, we have some pastors in the house, and I think some of you can maybe relate to my own personal struggle. Is sometimes it's like your kids are kind of like, oh, you're gonna bring that up again. Like, I have a 4-year-old daughter who is a thorough mama's girl. Like, she loves her mama, and she persecutes her daddy. Right, and I got to deal with this persecution. But every once in a while, mom's not around, and so I have the opportunity to put her to bed. So about 3 weeks ago, I put her to bed, and because I'm a pastor, I know a lot of Bible stories. So I will kind of tell her a Bible story, and I'll make it real dramatic, and she gets engaged. Well, 3 weeks ago, she said, Daddy, tell me a story, but not a story about God or Jesus or Mary or Noah. And I'm like, all right, you know, right? So as I kind of been wrestling with, like, why do we need Jesus? Why do your kids need Jesus? Can't they just be good kids and kind kids who are polite and get a good job one day? And as I've wrestled with, like, we're trying to hire a youth pastor here, a director of student ministries, and we're always talking about children's ministry. I have recently given myself, and I'll give you permission to doubt not only the discipleship methods of your household as well as the church, but the purpose of discipleship in the first place. I've been talking to people this past week and really trying to figure out, okay, why do our kids need Jesus? Like, why do they really need Jesus? Why not just teach them to be good kids? And I really believe that in the middle of the week, God gave me this verse that honestly, it was worth coming to church today just to hear this extraordinary verse, because here's the truth. Being good is not the goal. Like, being good is good. I want you to have good kids. It's nice to have good kids, but being good is not the goal at the end of the day. As a pastor, this is interesting. I'll have people come up to me sometimes who are unchurched. They're not part of a local church, and they'll say, as we're talking about somebody else, like maybe their brother or somebody they know who's going through a real hard time or making bad decisions, and this guy or this girl who's unchurched will say to me, yeah, that person needs church. I mean, they're going through, they need church. I mean, and what they say between the lines is, I don't need church because I'm a good person, but they need church. We got to get them in church. So all I have to say is, what's the whole point of the gospel? And if you're a Christian, you know that you're supposed to teach and model this to your kids, but why should we do that? Why not just allow them or teach them to be good kids? Here's what the Apostle Paul said. This is so good. This is so profound. He says to the church at Philippi 2,000 years ago, if anyone else thinks he has reasons to put confidence in the flesh, I got more. In other words, if you think you're a good person, if you think you got like the list of like good report card, and you know, if my parents were at a playground painting some equipment and they started to talk about good kids, I would have been at the top of the list because I was a really, really good kid. Like, I followed the scriptures to a T. I almost never met. I mean, he has so much confidence. He gives this list of all these good things that he does. And then he says this, as for legalistic righteousness, yeah, I was pretty much faultless. You know, sometimes you'll say things like, nobody's perfect. Well, if the Apostle Paul were within earshot, he would say, speak for yourself, because I'm pretty much perfect. I'm faultless. I have got it going on. So he says this. This is so powerful. He says, I consider everything a loss compared to the surpassing greatness of being faultless. I mean, there ain't nothing better than being a good person and having good kids. And there's nothing better than out of the 1,000 kids at Corning Painted Post Middle School for a teacher to say, your kid is amazing. Now, that's the not in there version. I made that up because that's not what the Apostle Paul said, though it's easy to think that. Here's what he actually said. This is so profound. He says this, compared to the greatness of knowing Christ Jesus, my Lord. The goal, my friends, is not to be good. The goal is to know Jesus. That's the goal of life. That's the goal of the Christian life, is to know Christ. So here's my encouragement. My big idea for this morning is simply that if you're a Jesus follower, you have a responsibility and a privilege to teach our kids inside out living. Now, you know what outside in living is. Outside in living is legalism. Right now, full disclosure, most of us parents would rather have a legalistic kid than a licentious kid. Most of us would say, I'd rather my kid be like, oh, I got to be really good and I got to follow directions and I got to make sure I don't bully people. We'd rather have that than the licentious kid who's like, I don't care. I'm going to bully people. I'm going to do whatever I want. I'm going to spend money. I'm going to be sexually immoral. But at the end of the day, legalism is exhausting, because legalism is like, I got to make sure I keep God happy and keep my parents and my teachers happy. And that can only work for so long. Jesus actually called the Pharisees, who were like definitions of legalism, whitewashed tombs. Because on the outside, you look good. And you walk by that tomb and you say, wow, look how clean it is. And the inside, it's full of dead men's bones. And if you grew up in a legalistic household, you know that it is joyless and it is dead. And it's exhausting. So the goal isn't to be a good person. The good news, the goal of the good news is not to be good. The goal of the good news is that you would know Jesus. And this has been really God's statement or his message even from the very beginning. So here's Moses. This is Deuteronomy chapter 6. He's got the children of Israel, right? They've spent 40 years spinning around in the wilderness, and he's got them all on the east side of the Jordan River here. There's like 2 million of them. I don't know how Moses did this without a microphone, but he must have had like a booming voice, right? He's got them all together, and he says to them, look, we're getting ready to cross the Jordan River. We're getting ready to, quote, get baptized. And we've got this beautiful piece of land on the coast of the Mediterranean Sea, which is 70 degrees and sunny in January, and it's flowing with milk and honey and big old grapes. But first, we're going to need to get by the giants. So as he's got them all on the precipice of the promised land, Moses gives a speech. This is Deuteronomy, which simply means second law, or it's a summary of the first law. And it's this speech to get them all pumped up as they get prepared for the promised land. This is what he says to them. These are the commands, the decrees and the laws the Lord your God directed me to teach you to observe in the land that you are crossing the Jordan to possess, so that your children and their children after them may fear the Lord your God. Now, someone once told me years ago that you know how you know if you're a successful parent? It's not necessarily that your kids fear the Lord, but that your grandkids fear the Lord. And some of you are grandparents. And some of you know the joy of raising kids who raised kids who fear the Lord. And Moses says that should be your vision. Not just that you follow the Lord, but your children do and their children do. But I got to tell you, Moses says to the nation of Israel, be careful. Be careful. Because you're about to get into a land with giants and all kinds of viewpoints and people who believe there are multiple paths to God. And if I offer the right sacrifice and do the right things, then God will bless me. You got to be careful to obey so that it may go well with you and that you may increase greatly in a land flowing with milk and honey, just as the Lord, the God of your the God of your fathers promised you. So hear, O Israel, the Lord is one. You got to remember that, because again, there's going to be people in your town and people in your school and your workplace telling you, well, there's like 1,000 different gods. You just kind of pick one. And he says, no, there's just one. So here's the first command. And I would argue the most important thing, getting ready to get into the promised land. You got to remember this. Your number one command is to love the Lord your God with all of your heart, right? Inside out, starts with the heart, with all of your soul, and with all of your strength. That's the most important thing you could do. If you're a parent, right? If you're not a Christian, you can sit back. This is not for you. You can point the finger at all of us who have a difficult time doing this. But if you're a Christian, right, this is the goal, that we would love God, that it would change our hearts, and we would live inside out living. Because we know this, and we would all agree with this, Christian or non-Christian, that a passionate love for something is contagious. Like some of you dads, right, you love hunting, and your kids love hunting now. Some of you moms, you love fill in the blank, and your kids love fill in the blank. It just kind of rubs off. So let me give you an illustration here. So I've been at this church for 12 years. I grew up and lived the first 34 years of my life in this little city called Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, just a couple miles outside the city. And when I was growing up, everybody, and when I say everybody, I mean like 99% of the people in my town, because nobody moves to Pittsburgh. Right, you live there and you grow up and everybody just kind of stays there. So pretty much everybody that I lived with was a Pittsburgh Steelers fan. There were like a couple Miami Dolphins fans because they had a player back in the day named Dan Marino who's from Pittsburgh. So you had a couple little Dolphins fans, but 99% of the people were Steelers fans. And if you were not a Steelers fan as a kid, I was like, that's weird. Like, you grew up in Pittsburgh, you're from Pittsburgh, and you're not a Steelers fan? That's like cognitive dissonance. That doesn't make any sense to me, right? And sometimes they would receive a little bit of persecution because it's like, come on, man, get with the program. I mean, everybody here is a Steelers fan. So 12 years ago, when my son Nate was 2 and my son Daniel was 6 months, the Lord called us to cross the Jordan River and come into the land flowing with glass and fiber, also known as Corning, New York. And I'm a Steeler fan, right? And I discover when I move here that I am surrounded by all these pagan viewpoints. I mean, there's giants in the land, there's fish, there's buffalo, mainly buffalo, and you've got meat packers and cowboys and eagles and giants. And I'm like, oh, no, no, no. As for me and my household, we will serve the black and gold, and we will be a light unto the nations, right? And I got to tell you this. I never, ever told my kids, thou shall be a Steeler fan. I just love the Steelers, and it rubbed off on them, and this is awesome. So this morning, you know, my son, he's on in the AV booth back there, and he's got a Steeler jersey on right now, and I didn't even tell him to wear it. He just wore it. I was going to tell him to wear it because it would make this sermon illustration even that much better, but that's just who he is, right? He loves the Steelers, and it's not because I told him to do it. It's because it rubbed off on him, and he's not surrounded by very many Steeler fans. And so to get back to this question, why would any parent force religion on their kids? And you know this as well as I do. You can't force your religion on kids, but you can love God and hope that it rubs off. You can put your kids in the right environments in hopes that it will rub off on them. One of my favorite pictures that I have this on my dresser. I love this picture of me and my son, Nate. He's just a little guy here, and we're walking to the Pittsburgh Pirates game. And I had no life at this point, so I went to 17 games in the first half of the season because someone gave me free tickets. And I would take him to these games, and he doesn't even remember going to these games. But today, he's 14 years old, and he is a diehard Pittsburgh Pirates fan, and I'm like, we will be faithful to the Pirates, and we will learn what it looks like to suffer. So what you love is contagious. Now, that's a little bit of a silly example because, let's be honest, the devil doesn't care which sports team you follow. God doesn't care which sports team you follow. Unless you're a Ravens fan, then he cares. But God doesn't care what sport. So it's like choose whatever you want. Whatever you want to follow, that's fine. But he does care that you follow Jesus, and he'll work extra time, extra overtime, that we become sprinklers instead of disciplers. Now, here's what some of you are thinking right now, and if you're not thinking this, I'm going to allow you to think this. Okay, if you're a Christian, you're like, I know I should love God, but I don't feel it. I know I'm supposed to follow Jesus and be on fire, right? But if you're honest, you're thinking, my fire is more of a flicker. It's just a little bit of a flicker. And I don't know how to increase my love for God, you might be thinking. And maybe the best place to start, and if you're here, that's a great start, right? If you're watching online, that's a great start. But maybe the best thing you can do is to just be honest with your kids and say, look, I'm called to raise you in the faith, but I'm not feeling it and I'm struggling. Can we do this together? And when you're honest with the Lord, right, you say, I want to increase my zeal for you. God can take your flicker and turn it into a flame. So Moses, as they're preparing to enter the promised land, says, these commandments that I give you today, if we go to the next slide, these commandments that I give you today are to be upon your hearts. I want this to be a heart thing. I want you to love God so that it just becomes an overflow and it doesn't become legalistic, dead man's effort, exhausting, trying to follow. He says, I want you to take these commands to love the Lord your God and impress them on your children. Right? Now, it's hard to impress your children. Right? Like, I was playing basketball Tuesday night, and I had a pretty nice shot, and my son happened to be there, and I looked over at him. I'm like, how about that? Well, he was not impressed with my shot. It is hard to impress your children, but I'm not talking about that kind of impression, right? I'm talking about a different kind of intentionality, impressing these these things on the hearts of our children. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home, when you're having a meal together, when you walk along the road, or this was obviously said before cars were invented, when you drive along the road, when you lie down, and when you get up. Talk about it. Bring it up. Quick little prayers. Little, you know, hey, when you pick up your kids from children's church today, hey, what'd you learn? How can we take that one little truth and apply it to our lives? Now, this is hard, right? It is way easier to stand up here and talk about this than to actually pull it off. So I want to take a moment to talk to the teenagers in the room, okay? If you're a teenager, you're in sixth, seventh, eighth, you're in high school, let me just say, this is really, really hard and sometimes awkward to talk about this with our parent, with our kids, right? And we bring it up, right? And your teenager's like, oh, we got to talk about that. So I just want to say to the teenagers, just show us a little bit of grace. When we want to bring this up or we want to pray with you, just show us some grace and try to engage with us a little bit as we tie these truths as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads and write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates. It's just living out your faith and talking about it intentionally. So my man John Van Sciver, who's up here playing guitar, and his wife Katie have a really good idea I want to share with you. They have this chalkboard where they write down the prayers of certain people in their lives. I think I even found my name right here, which is pretty cool. And they just pray for people, and they pray with your kids. And I just think that's look, we need, for people like me who are visual, like we need visual cues to serve God and to pray. And Moses says, just talk about it. And again, teenagers, have grace because sometimes it's awkward to pray with your kids, and it's awkward to pray with your wife and your husband, but we're trying to do what we're called to do. He goes on, he says, when the Lord your God brings you into the land he swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give you a land with large, flourishing cities you did not build. So Moses kind of sounds like a parent here, right? He's like, houses filled with all kinds of good things you did not provide. I mean, you have conversations with your teenagers and you're like, boy, who put this roof over your house? Who put the food in the cupboard? Who put the gas in the car? You didn't do it. I provided it, right? It sounds like a little bit of an angry parent, but it's a good reminder to all of us that God provided everything that we have. Even your ability to work and produce wealth and income, your ability to raise children, it all comes from God. So Moses says, look, when you eat and are satisfied, you got to be careful. One of the greatest dangers to your spiritual growth is satisfaction. Because let's be honest, when life is good and the kids are well-behaved and they're getting good grades and you're satisfied, it's easy to just think, we'll get a little God when it comes around. We'll go to church when the weather's bad. Or we'll make this a priority when it's convenient. So Moses says, you got to be careful. Be careful that you do not forget the Lord, because it's so easy to forget him. Now you say, why should I be careful that I don't forget the Lord? Because he brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. And if you're a Christian, when Jesus instituted the Last Supper, the new covenant, on the night of Passover, when they celebrated Exodus from Egypt, if you're a Christian, the reason that we serve the Lord is because he brought us out of sinful slavery and into a new life. And if you serve Jesus, your old life is no longer your master. You serve a new master because you've been bought with a price. So serve him. That's your job, to serve him, to love him, to be passionate for him, to allow your kids to see it and to intentionally teach them and to bring them to church. Now, again, this is so much easier to talk about than to do. I love the quote from Klein Snodgrass, who is a commentator, a Bible scholar, who wrote, unfortunately, too many people, including Christians, have a public and a private persona. And that is certainly me, right? I'm a lot more holy on the stage than I am behind closed doors. And recently, I've been asking some people in my small group on Tuesday morning. Somebody even texted me this morning and said, how can I pray for you? And I said, can you pray for me that I stop yelling at my kids so much? Because it's easy to talk about it up on the stage, but then you get behind closed doors and it's like, It's easy to have a different persona. But the goal is, as we follow Jesus, that our public persona and the persona that we have behind closed doors gets closer and closer. And that's called integrity. That we are the same person behind closed doors, that we don't lose our cool with our kids all the time. He says, look, they appear as warm, congenial, righteous people in public, but are demons at home. We are ourselves with the people closest to us. May that not be us. May we be people with integrity who are able to be patient and love our kids in the midst of the daily grind. Okay, so I want to get really practical here and just give some ideas that I've learned from other people and some things that have worked for me. So you might want to write these down or take a picture. But number one, here's the first thing you need to do. You need to cross the Jordan. You need to get baptized. You need to go down under the water and back up to demonstrate that you're a Jesus follower, to make a public profession of faith. You need to cross the Jordan. Number two, you need to commit to immersion in kids' church and in youth group. And I really, really believe in this. And I know some of you, you're like, well, I tried kids' church, but they didn't. Look, life is all about habits. And just because they didn't like it the first time, I mean, did you tell that to your kids when they didn't like their vegetables? Oh, you didn't like it the first time. That's right. You never need to eat vegetables again. Right? I've heard parents say, well, I don't want to force my kid to go to youth group because they might be turned off by the church. And my thought is, they're already turned off by the church if they're not going to youth group. What do you have to lose? I mean, when they get up in the morning, you don't say, do you feel like going to school today, son? No, you say, no, you're going to school, and you're not worried about turning them off of school. So you got to optimize your environments. You got to, look, you can't force your kids to be a Christian, but you can get them in environments. And look, you get them in children's church week after week, all of a sudden, they'll start to say, I kind of like that. There's someone there who cares about me. There's someone who loves me. I got some friends who are rubbing off on me. I go to youth group maybe the first or second time. It's awkward, but then it starts to become a habit, and you start to build up some relationships. It's a powerful thing to demonstrate to your kids that you're not sprinkling discipleship, but that you're committed, that you love the church. So I got a text the other day from a friend of mine. After last week's service, I talked about sex in last week's service, and she wrote me a text. She said, my four-year-old never asks me this, but she asked me today, so what'd you guys talk about in church? And she's like, so she kind of answered her question, and then she said this to her four-year-old daughter. She said, mommies and daddies are supposed to love each other. And then she looked at her four-year-old daughter and said, why does your mommy and daddy love each other? And her response was golden. This four-year-old girl looked at her mother and said, the reason that you guys love each other is because you go to church together. Now, I know some of you have a spouse who is not going to church, and that can be a struggle. So you keep on coming, and you rub off on your kids. Married couples, I'm telling you, the consistency of just doing this week in and week out demonstrates to your kids that I love God. That I love him, that he's a priority in my life. The people of God are a priority in my life. So commit to immersion and not just sprinkling. Number three, pray for your kids. Even short, quick little prayers at nighttime throughout the day. Doesn't need to be long prayers. Number four, I call this, or what is one takeaway? Like when you get your kids from kids' church today, you should ask them, what's one thing you learned? Now, this is a side note, okay? I'm only going to talk to a few people right now. If you're a kids' church teacher or a youth group teacher, focus on one phrase, one point, so that when we pick up our kids, they can repeat that one point, because it's about application and transformation, not just information, okay? So that's number four. Hey, what'd you learn today? And then the other one is one-on-one-on-one. Something that I've been convicted of lately is, what if you just took your kid out for a milkshake and just asked one question about God? Prepare the question, bring it up. If you talk about it for 30 seconds, no big deal. You talk about it for 4 hours, even better. Just one question. Just a couple minutes. You're getting them to think about the goodness of God in their lives. Now, I say this one all the time, number six. I want you to serve on a ministry team. About 55%, our numbers, both in our database as well as the survey that we took a couple of weeks ago, shows that about 55% of our people are serving on a ministry team at least once a month, which means there's a lot of you who have not yet jumped into service. And I get it. I understand why you might not do that. And some of you, you do need a sabbatical, like you need to just not serve. But most of you should be serving on a ministry team. And it tells your children, look, I don't just attend church, but I love the church. Right? It's a priority. I want to make a difference. I want to serve the church. Some of you should be teaching children's church. Some of you should take the knowledge and the love that you have for kids and let it rub off on some of other kids. I have an 8-year-old who loves his kids' church teacher. And some of you, you got an image in your mind right now of what a kids' church teacher looks like. So I'm gonna break that stereotype. Because this guy is a great kids' church teacher and has made a huge difference in my kid's life as well as my life. And this is what he looks like right there. How about that? Steve Ormsby, love this guy. Love the difference that he's making in our church. So beartownroad.org/serve. I know most of you aren't going to do that. I've been around long enough to know most of you aren't going to do that. But what if just a couple of you did that today? You said, I'm not going to be just a sprinkler. I'm going to be committed. I'm going to demonstrate to my kids that I love the church. And then lastly, we're on a search for a director of student ministries. So Cody and Megan have been doing an amazing job with our students. We want to hire a full-time person to supplement the great work that they're doing. So would you please consider praying for this search, that God would bless us with someone who can invest their life in full-time commitment to our student ministry? Would you pray for that? So there's my ideas. All that to say is that if you're a Jesus follower, this isn't really a choice, right? It's a privilege. It's a responsibility to teach and to model to our kids, not just be a good kid, just be kind, but to know Jesus, to be transformed, to have your heart love the Lord your God, and that it would be inside out living. Because at the end of the day, legalism is exhausting and it's joyless. And none of us are interested in legalism, but we are interested in building a relationship with the God of the universe who loves you and died for you, that you may know him and that it would be transformative to your heart. And then it would just spill over to your kids and your kids would catch it and spill over to their kids and those kids would catch it and spill over to their kids.